10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yo, you already know who it is. It's Mr. Hear Me Out himself. And that's right, we are back at it again with another Hear Me Out episode where we create a safe space to talk about shared experiences with open dialogue. And on this week's episode, I got author Cedric Boyd, the writer, and I haven't got a chance to read this book, but from the interviews that I have researched, I'm definitely about to tap in and read it. But I want to welcome you to the show, Cedric. How you doing?
I'm good, Marco. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. You know, I'm Black, I'm alive, and still blessed.
That's right. Amen. Me too.
Yes.
Hashtag me too, bro. Yeah, I'm good too.
Yeah, so for everybody that's out there listening, me and Cedric, we networked and had some DMs about him coming on the show and sharing his book and, you know, sharing his experience as an author. So I just want to, you know, give him the floor to, one, introduce himself and, you know, drop some knowledge on us. So, Cedric, before we get all up into your business, tell us about you.
All right, my name's Cedric Boyd. I've been married 21 years. That's my biggest accomplishment, brother. Trust me, because when you find somebody that loves you, loves the crust of you, like Chris Rock says, you got to love the crust of somebody, brother.
Right. That's what we love.
She loves the crust of me and vice versa. So, yeah, I played a little ball in college. I went to Missouri State. Track and field. I graduated from Missouri State in 19, blah, 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 blah. You know, so nobody really needs to know my age. I'm Black, so you can't tell anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So he's like, what are you, like 31? No, I'm 53. 53! Yeah. You know, so, yeah.
So you I know, Black don't cry.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I worked for the probation department in Yolo County for about 15 years. I worked for Job Corps for 5 years. I left that position in January. I got a little bit of scratch, so I'm just going to chill for a while till I find another gig. I wrote The Good Wolf back in 2013. You know, sometimes it takes some time, brother, to pick up speed with stuff. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're ahead of the curve and they don't kind of know what to do with you, but everything seems to be falling in place now, which is a blessing. I wrote the sequel, which is entitled Randall Whitmore.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, a couple of years after that, and strangely enough, everything's starting to pick up speed now, which I'm not mad about at all.
Well, the good thing about the internet and books they're timeless, so they're gonna reach who they want to reach at the correct time.
Absolutely. You know, God gets it ready when you're ready. He's yeah. already got Ooh. The blessing waiting for you, brother. You know, you just got to be ready to receive it, or it'll be a curse instead of a blessing. So
Let me ask you, how did you get into writing?
Well, that's a good story, Marco. Thank you for asking me. Well, what happened was back in 2010-ish, my mother unfortunately lost her house, you know, due to a predatory loan. So she moved in with myself and my wife. And she had written a book entitled Sex Out of Wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a story about, excuse me. It was a story about how my mother met my father and the circumstances around it. And she'd been working on it about 7 years. And she always knew I was a pretty good writer. So she'd ask me to like look at it and work on it. And I was just, yeah, all right, Bob, whatever, you know, I'll get cracking here in a minute, you know. So I never really did it. I just kind of blew her off. So once she moved in the house, she had the manuscript, you know, and mm-hmm. brother, when I say manuscript, I mean manuscript. I'm talking about typed, white out on a typewriter, you know. So, you know, my mom was 70. She was like 65 or 6 at the time. You know, she ain't using no computer and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I read it. I picked through it. I was like, yeah, Mom, it's good. I'll help you. It ended up, everybody really ended up liking it. And I guess that's how I got started, with writing. It was always something that I could do, but I never really saw the value in it because I wanted to play basketball, you know? So the teachers would call my mother and be like, Cedric's a writer. And she's like, yeah, he really don't want to write. He wants to play basketball, you know? So the teachers would get mad. They're like, he's going to do what he wants to do. So the ironic part is she brought me back to it. I would say accidentally, but we understand there's no accidents, brother. Like it comes back to you when it's supposed to, you know, it's just a gift. It's nothing I tried to do. It's just a gift, and I'm trying to explore my gift as best I can.
Well, shout out to moms and teachers and everybody that supports dreams that you don't see, but they see it in you. Cause that's a big lesson too. They'll be like, oh, well, you should do this. You'd be like, no, that's not on my radar. And then look at you. Got two books out.
Years later, Marco, you know, so and the ironic thing was I was never going to be a professional athlete, as good an athlete as I was. I just got hurt all the time. You know, I always said I should be a piano player or something where you don't get hurt. So I kind of ended up being a piano player. I just used the typewriter instead of the keyboard instead of the piano, you know. But I knew, like, even when I was in college, I was lucky enough to get two scholarships, one for track and one for basketball. And I would just get hurt and I get frustrated because that's kind of what I wanted to do. But you know, God kind of puts you like where he needs you most. So I don't think that was ever going to be a realistic thing for me, no matter how good I was, because I just got hurt a lot.
Yeah. Well, we got some similarities. I ran track also. What did you run? Side note.
I was triple jumper.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't doing all that. I did the 1-2 in both relays, and that was
right on, brother. Right on. Did you run in high school or college?
I ran in high school, and then I ran for one semester in college. And then I personally realized college just wasn't for me, and I, you know, dropped out and just went about my black ass life.
Started your journey, brother. Absolutely.
Right. I got you. So in the book, The Good Wolf, what character do you relate to the most?
Well, I would say Randall Whitmore, the protagonist. He would be like my alter ego. He's the worst parts of me, you know. So, you know, he's very self-absorbed. He's very flawed. But you can see the goodness in him. You know what I mean? You could, like, when I'm at my best, I'm really, really good. When I'm at my worst, like most people, I'm not so great. So when Randall's at his worst, he's not that great, you know? Gotcha. But you can see the potential in him as a good man. And he's roughly 34 years old. He's very successful. He lives in LA. Got a lot of money, women stuff, blah, blah, blah. But he's not happy because he doesn't have purpose. So the first two books, we're trying to find out Randall's purpose, and he kind of gets there in the second book. But you know, Marco, he looks in all the places that we look, you know, with money and stuff and sex and whatever. You know what I mean? And it's not filling him up, and he doesn't understand why. You know, so a series of really horrible things happen to him. Then he has to figure out what he wants to do.
That's dope. Cause I feel like I'm at that stage right now, not, you know, sex and drugs and all that, but at the point of just being like successful and just be like, oh, is this enough? Is this not enough? Am I doing enough? Like,
right.
Why am I attracting all these other things and not really just living in my purpose and just understanding my purpose? So I like Randall.
He's cool, man. He's a cool guy. Everybody seems to love him. Younger women really, really love him. Guys want to be him. But older women that read the book, they kind of, you know, they have a little more experience. So they kind of see the pain and the struggle and the, that's a red flag here and you know, like, so, the older you are, the more in depth I think you can get into it. But the beautiful thing about the Good Wolf is it kind of meets you where you're at, like what good art is supposed to do. You know, I worked at Job Corps for years, and there was a white kid that both his parents were meth addicts, and he read my book. He was like, "Mr. Boyd, I really love your book, man. You know, like I get it." And then I gave it to a black girl, maybe a few years, 4 or 5 years older than her. And she was like, "Mr. Boyd, I really get your book, you know." And then I have a dentist, you know, who's in her 50s. She's Persian. She comes from money. And she's like, "Mr. Cedric, I really love your book," you know. So it's kind of crossing. It has a real universal appeal to it, which is what we wanted to do.
It sounds like it's very therapeutic for the soul, especially with all the feedback reviews, whatever people call it, online. Like I was on Amazon just reading all the reviews of people just loving it. And this book is amazing. It changed my life. And oh my gosh. And we want another one. So how do you react to the success?
I think when it first happened, I kind of knew how good it was. And I didn't react the way that I should have reacted, with patience and understanding, knowing that it takes time. I'd never done anything like this. So I thought the better the product was, the quicker it would sell. And we need to understand, Marco, that that's not the way it works.
Right.
You know, it's marketing. It's, you know, putting time and energy into it, regardless of how good it may or may not be. Mm-hmm. You know, we've recently watched the Genius documentary on Netflix.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you watched it. It's about Kanye. About Kanye.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't yet, but I plan. Yeah. On
well,
it.
When you get a chance, you know, please do. So it took Kanye 9 years to get College Dropout released. It took him 5 years to get signed, even though he was already making beats for Jay-Z, he was doing all this stuff. He was crushing it. It took him 4 years to make it. He had to pay for all the artists to come on. He had to pay for his own studio time. And this is Kanye. You know, this is a man that's already been extremely successful in the music business, but they weren't ready for him when he came. And that was the problem. They were looking for something else instead of looking for greatness. And if you're looking for something else and greatness happens to hit you in the face, you're not ready for it because you were expecting it coming in a different package. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's been the problem with the Good Wolf. Like, even people that read it, they're stunned that I haven't sold 10 million copies. I'm like, well, from your mouth to God's ears, because I'd love to sell 10 million copies, but it's not my time, it's his time. All I can do is just keep networking like I did with you, Marco. And again, I appreciate you hitting me back so we can, you know, do something as wonderful as this. I just did a book club for the Black Girls Book Club. There's like 5,000 members roughly. I just did that. I finished that a couple weeks ago. So that was very successful. So we're definitely going in the right direction. There's no doubt about it. But I did not handle it well 8 years ago, but I'm handling it much better now.
That's dope. I like to hear that because not only do we want our viewers or readers or, again, whatever people call them, to enjoy our success, but we have to enjoy it as the creator.
Correct.
So have you ever, since time is moving so fast with everybody and, you know, everything just so streaming, you ever thought about audiobook?
We do have one. We have one.
Okay.
My frat brother, Thorne Liggins, he read it and was like, and he's an audio guy. He's like, "Boy, we got to do an audiobook, you know?" So we did one. It's available on Amazon. And, you know, it took maybe 27 different voices. I called people from college. I used people at work. I used people at my old job. I used my wife as a voice. I did a couple of voices, you know. So it was a real nationwide manhunt for people I knew. I was like, oh man, they got a voice like this, or such and such has got a voice like that. And you have to, you know, people will bail and fake and say they're going to do it and blah, blah, blah. But you just got to keep your head down and keep chopping and get to the goal, you know.
Don't I know?
And that's what we did. And Thorne did the voice of Randall Whitmore, because I don't think I have his voice. But I did a few other voices, excuse me. So that was fun. It was great. Being a producer was the same way. When I got the book, my friend did the cover. I'll hold up a picture of it if you don't mind. I know nobody's going to see it but us. Here's the cover of the book.
Yeah.
This is the wolf's ears right here. I'm trying not to. This is his ears right here. Mm-hmm. And this is his chin. So people,
okay.
Yo, is that the devil or something? I'm like, nah, man, it's just.
It's the actual wolf.
It's the actual wolf. So that's the emblem, and that's the face. And I got a picture of it hanging up behind me. I only do that when I do interviews, because I'm not a lunatic. So, you know, I'm not hanging up pictures of myself staring at them all day. Yeah.
So, I do.
Yeah. I can't get away with that with my wife. She'll be like, can you take that picture? Two seconds after the interview, he's like, yeah, it needs to go down. I'm like, man, it's just like, what's going on? In the guest room. Yeah, it's like, no, we ain't doing that.
So I know, you have a paper copy, you got audio. You ever thought about a visual format of this?
I have. Fortunately, living in California and living in Atlanta, you run into people, right? So I had a friend of mine I worked with that read the book, and he's like, hey man, this book is awesome. I got a friend who makes movies. So I was like, cool, what's his name? So he said, Deion Taylor. And I was trying to think about who he was. I was like, oh yes, brother. He did Meet the Blacks and The Intruder and all this stuff. So he's like, well, I'm gonna hook up a meeting with you. So they were hooping. I can't hoop anymore because my feet are bad. So I gave him a copy and he said he was gonna look at it. I don't think he did. You know, which is fine, as long as he has the book and maybe some of his people can look at it or whatever, or not. You know, it's up to them. But I've been able to get it into some people's hands, and I'm just kind of waiting to hear back from it, because I'm not gonna, me trying to shoot it wouldn't do it justice.
Okay.
You know, it has to be done properly. And because there's two books, I think the ultimate goal would be to have it like a Netflix series or something, like three seasons, and each chapter would just be, each chapter would just be an episode, and then there's 24 chapters, so I chop it up, three seasons, eight shows like that, or stretch it out or whatever I needed to do. So that would be the goal, something like that, yeah.
You're very innovative. So I like when Netflix has the show and it's like series and episodes.
Right,
I'm
right.
Like, oh, this is right. I actually really get to dive in the characters and they really get to develop versus something one season and 12 episodes. I'm like, that went too fast. I need more. Like, I got some questions to ask.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that would give me, you know, the goal would be like Ozark or something, or Insecure, something along those lines, you know, would be the ultimate goal, because it's already written, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it'd have to be turned into scripts, which isn't going to really be a problem. You can convert a lot of dialogue into scripts, and giving it three seasons gives it room to breathe. You know, you can get to know each character and know what's going on. I just think I have a really good base. I want to do it justice. I don't want to take the first offer. I don't want to do this. I've had some offers. I've had some things that I thought were shaky. So I was like, no, I'll wait. I'll be patient, you know, until I see what I need to see, and then we'll proceed forward.
Just shifting gears a little bit. I was I was listening to one of your interviews, and you mentioned that you lost your father back in 2011.
Correct.
So that's another thing that we have in common, because I lost my father, but back in 2005.
I'm sorry to hear that, brother. You're pretty young.
It was very young. But one thing you said in your interview, you was like, a lot of people, especially men, my father was good, but my father was this. But can you elaborate that? Because I'm one of those people. I'm like, my father was a good father, but he was never there. He was in jail or whatever the case may be.
Let me elaborate on that. I dedicated the book to my father. I absolutely love and adore my father, but I also see my father. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't have any misconceptions about who he is or what he was. And a lot of stuff, we had to love him through it, because he's just a man, trying to make his way through. Maybe some things he did to my mom weren't cool. Some of his behavior was not solid. There's a lot of stories that are kind of painful to discuss with some of his behavior, and some of that stuff I carried into my adulthood. But when I became an adult, I started to understand some of the stuff that he did, that he's just a man and he's flawed. So it gave me a lot of forgiveness in my heart, which is great. That's like, he's a person. He's not Superman like I had him built up to be. So in becoming an adult, I always wanted to have my wife love me without the but, right? Just Cedric is a good man, period. I love him, period. But unfortunately, because I'm a human being, there's some buts in there, right? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to work through the buts, right? And we're getting to a place where there's no more buts. It's just, I love him. I know him. He's good. But the buts are what makes life interesting. That gives you the ability to write with pain and empathy and be able to understand other people's plights. Because we didn't have any buts in the struggle and stuff, we really couldn't relate to anyone.
Right.
And that's the beauty of struggle. Like, we all understand it and we all have to go through it, and nobody's immune to it.
How did you forgive him? I'm very big on therapy, and I've been working on this for the last 3 years, but like, how did you start that process of just forgiving?
I was about 22. And he retired and moved to Alabama, Lynette, Alabama. So he's actually out your way right now. Mm-hmm. That's right on the Georgia-Alabama border. And I was about 22. And we had his time to get real conversation. And I said, Dad, some of that stuff you did when I was a kid, it wasn't cool. And then he tried to, explain his way out of it. And I was like, nah, Dad, some of that stuff wasn't cool. Stuff he did to Mom, he left us hanging sometimes, blah, blah, blah. And what did it for me was he was like, I'm sorry. I never heard him say that. I'm sorry, man. I know I did some dumb stuff, and that did it for me. He just acknowledged it. Every once in a while it would flare up. I'd get angry about some stuff in my past, which is living in the past, which isn't how you want to live. And I would choke it right back down by saying, the man already apologized. What else do you want him to do?
Right.
He didn't live up to my expectations. He didn't live up to his expectations. You know what I mean? So for me, I had the ability, because my dad is above anything else, he's a good person, So he knew I needed to hear that, and he also understood. He's like, yeah, you're going to go through some stuff too, man, and you'll get it. Just keep living, So me and my father were at complete peace, which I wish for everybody, man, to make peace with their parents before they go. If you got any kind of funky grudges or whatever you got going on, just let it go, man, let it go. And I dedicated the book to him, I owe him everything. Him and my mother, I owe him everything.
That's dope. That story touched me, so I know it's gonna touch some people that's listening.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
Yeah, it will. So a few more questions before I turn the mic over to you. So what's your creative process to like start writing? I'm always curious of like what's people's thing, so to say, mm-hmm. like before they get in their creative space. So what is yours?
Well, I'll just speak for the Good Wolf in general and Randy mm-hmm. Whitmore. I was working at the probation department. I was working in the juvenile hall and I was working at night. So there was really nothing to do after the kids went to sleep, but I was a supervisor, so I had an office. So I read about 4 chapters of 50 Shades of Grey. And I was like, I was going to keep it real. I didn't think it was very good, man. You know, I know it sounds terrible. It sounds bad. But right. I was like, is this it? And I turned around immediately and start writing The Good Wolf. You know, and my process is I don't use an outline. I don't do anything. I sit down at the computer and I say, God, what do you have for me today? And I just start typing. And I trust that the words are going to make it from my head to my hands and just go from there. There was one lady that was working at night and she loved it so much. She would just do all the work and just say, just go in the office and start writing. So I was sending her emails and sometimes I'd send her 15, 20 pages a night. She's like, how are you doing this? You know, I'm like, I don't really know. I don't really question it. I just sit down and do it. I don't try to analyze it. I don't try to overanalyze it. I just trust my talent and I trust that God's going to put the words in my hands. And I kind of just get out of the way. Marco, I think that's the hardest part about writing is mm-hmm. to get out of your own head and just let it come the way it's supposed to come. From the writers I've spoken to and the writers I've helped writing books, I'm like, they're like, well, how do you deal with writer's block? I'm like, well, I don't get it. And they're like, what do you mean you don't get it? I mean, I don't get it. You know, I don't. I think writer's block, you know, comes a lot from people questioning what they're writing instead of accepting it, that it's coming. And then you can always edit it later, but just allow it to flow. It's like trying to stop a river. You can't stop a river. You just let a river go where the river's going to go. And you can't have any preconceived notions about what you're going to write. You know, when you're open-minded to it and you go, this book is going to go wherever it goes. I'm not going to steer it. I'm not going to outline it. I'm not going to jam it into what I think it should be. I'm going to let it go in the direction it's supposed to go. And it always works better like that for me.
Well, I like that because I'm on the, a lot of my friends have told me to write a book about my life and my journey and shit. Yeah, and I get writer's block and I'm just like, oh, what do I want to write about? So I just got to get to the table and just start typing.
What it is, Marco, is we're afraid to be vulnerable, right? Because nobody wants to be vulnerable, right? Nobody wants to expose their inner thoughts and their thought process and strip it all down. But if you're going to be an artist, it is necessary and required. Vulnerability is not an option, you know. Maybe if you're writing a cookbook or something, you know, but if you're writing a personal heart-to-heart kind of, okay, this is where we're at, and you're trying to connect with another person, you got to be wide open, brother. I mean, you got to be wide open, you know, and that is a scary feeling. But the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, it really becomes the only way you can work. Because you don't want to see bullshit in your work. You know, you want to see the reality of the situation in your work.
You preaching on the mic tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. When you get old, you learn some stuff, brother. You know?
Yes.
When you get old.
Speaking of Speaking of older, I know you got tons of knowledge and you've received advice, you gave advice. So what advice do you have, like, to anybody that's listening?
Marco, all I can say is trust your instincts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trust your instincts, because this journey is going to be hard. But it's a lot harder if you're not doing what you really want to do, right? It doesn't matter how much money you're making.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that your instincts, it doesn't necessarily mean that your instincts are going to bring you instant gratification. It's actually probably the opposite. You know, like you're going to be, like your theories are going to be tested. You know, I have one story, if you don't mind me getting into, Marco, if you got time.
I don't mind.
Okay, brother. Well, I had just left Yolo County probation, and it was kind of an ugly situation. So it was time for me to go, or people going to start getting punched in the nose and stuff. So it was time for me to get out of there. So I started driving Uber, selling my book in the car, doing whatever I got to do, hustle. You know, I got a mortgage and stuff I got to take care of. So I was driving a lot. So this particular day, I was really tired, and I text my wife. Or I called her, I don't remember exactly what, but I just knew I was frustrated and I didn't want to do it anymore. I was like, I'm going to go find a job and this ain't it. And I'd been at it a couple of years. And so I was just kind of frustrated. I was beat, right? So I got a call from, I got a hit on Uber, and I was in a town called Elk Grove in Northern California. And the hit was in Wilton, which is about 15 miles away. And it was raining. It was nasty. And I was like, man, do I even want to drive out here right now? And I was like, I ain't got nothing else to do. So I drove out there, picked the person up. It was rainy. It was crazy. When I pulled up to the house, there's a bunch of crazy stuff going on. I don't know if it was a sex party. I don't know what was happening, brother. But I just know it was house music going loud. It was a wild scene, bro. So I picked up these two people. You know, these two white folks, and they were like drunk and rude and just being buttholes. And, you know, especially the guy, he was just being a jerk, man. But, you know, when I was driving Uber, and if I got a bad customer, I would just look at my phone and go 7 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, bye, and just let them go out the door. So I didn't really trip. But this guy was really trying to get under my nerves, under my skin. Mm-hmm. And I was about to pull up, just drop him out in the rain, like find another ride. But I was like, nah, I can't let this dude win. And to me, that's win, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, about 5 or 6 minutes of the ride, maybe a little bit longer, I have my books sitting in the back seat. And the girl picked up the book and she looked at it and she was like, oh, somebody left a book back here, The Good Wolf. I love that book. I said, what? She said, yeah, I love that book. Now you can see on my book that my picture is not on the book. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't know that I wrote the book. And she wasn't even from Sacramento, right? So I was asking her, like, what do you love about it? She's like, oh, the characters. And, you know, it's just so well written. And I have dyslexia. So for me to read a book, you know, it's torture. Like, I got to really struggle through it. And she's like, I really like the fact that Randall had secrets, because I don't tell anybody I'm dyslexic, because she's like a CEO in Livermore, the Bay Area. It's about 80 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So we start chit-chatting, and then eventually I was like, well, ma'am, I hate to tell you, but I wrote it. And she was like, what? I said, yeah, I'm Cedric Boyd. I wrote The Good Wolf. And I gave her my card. And she nearly burst into tears. She's like, why are you driving? Ooh, what's going on here? I don't understand. Like, what's going on? Is this real? Like, why are you not in a mansion? Why are you? And I said, ma'am, it just don't work that way. And then here comes the apologies, and we're sorry, and we were drinking and blah. And I was like, it's all good. I'm not tripping. But that just further let me know that you need to be careful the way that you speak to people, because you have no idea who you're speaking to, right? And I guarantee if she would have knew who I was before she jumped in the car, the behavior would have been a lot different. you know.
Right.
So that taught me a lesson that I already know and I already learned, that you treat people right. You treat everybody the way they're supposed to be treated. And I even wrote a little something about that in The Good Wolf. And it's ironic that she behaved the same way that the person did when they got in this other person's car. So, but it was crazy. She's like, don't you ever stop writing. Don't you ever, you know, I gave her a book. I signed the copy. She was so happy and just blown away. She gave me her card. I called her a couple times. She never called me back because I think she was thinking about the stuff she was saying in the car, you know, that I was going to try.
Right.
She's also a politician. So this was a woman that was very successful, you know. Gotcha. You know us. I'm not putting her business out in the street, you know, because it's an Uber ride. What happens in Uber stays in Uber.
Stays in Uber.
You know. Yeah. So, I'm not tripping. But that just gave me so much encouragement at a time I needed, and that just proved to me that my instincts were correct to just stay with it. Now we know when you do something different, Marco, it's going to get funky. Like mm-hmm. extra funky with a side of funky, you know. So we know that.
When right.
So you just got to hang in there, be patient. If you have to go back to work, go back to work. Do whatever is necessary to get to where you need to go. But never let that dream die, and always go with your gut. Because God put it in there for a reason. And the reason isn't for you to ignore it and go get a job at the post office. That's not the reason, unless that's what you want to do, you know. So,
right.
The phone company, like Tyler Perry's mom said, they'll get you a job at the phone company, boy, make $300 a week and you'll be good. You know, so he had to, you know how it is. They love you. They're just concerned, you know. That's all it is.
Yeah. Man, that's a, that's an amazing story. I love that. Yeah. I would have never thought that. I didn't think that the person in your Uber was a fan of yours, but it's crazy. Well, it's a wonderful feeling when things come full circle, not only for absolutely. You, but for people. So
absolutely. It's awesome.
Speaking of full circle, this is the part of the interview where I pass the mic to you and you get to ask me a question where we deliberate and, yeah.
Okay, Brad, I had a question reading your background. I see you lived in Portland, D.C., Atlanta. Was there a reason that you moved around so much? Were you just trying to experience different things or what was going on?
Experience, yes, would be the word. So from Portland to D.C., I just knew growing up, like, Portland was not my...
Wasn't the business.
Like the end yeah, it just yeah, wasn't yeah, the you. End destination. And at that time, you know, I found somebody that I trust. And right. you know, we were together for a while, so
gotcha.
We both had careers and jobs that just let us move up and down the East Coast.
Gotcha.
But you know, I just had the opportunity with no kids, and you know, my other half at the time didn't have kids. And I was like, well, you know, why not just keep moving and just experience life and just take all this knowledge in that the East Coast has. I personally always feel like in my past life, I was born on the East Coast or in the down South somewhere.
I got you, bro.
It's very rare that I go home. Like right. I try to get all my friends and my family outside of their norm because there's 49 other states and you can learn so much about yourself. You can learn so much from other people. And I'm thankful for the lessons that life has taught me. Yeah, but Atlanta's home now. I'm not moving anymore. I'm too old to be doing all that.
Yeah, I went down there twice, not too long ago, for my father's funeral and then my uncle's funeral. And I dropped off a couple of books at, you know, at Tyler Perry's place. Strangely enough, he hasn't hit me back yet. So the goal is at some point in time, I know he only gets 10,000 books and 10,000 scripts every single day. Yeah, but
right.
he definitely has mine. So mine will be one of the 10,000, definitely.
Right. So he got people in Atlanta. Yeah, people in Atlanta making billboards for him of put me in your next video and stuff,
yeah,
or
I know.
Movie.
I know.
And I'm like, hey, you just sometimes you just gotta try your luck out.
Absolutely. Maybe you'll see your face, you know, and he'll be like here's the thing about it, Marco. I think the Good Wolf and Randall Whitmore are so good that eventually it will find its way to where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to enjoy and embrace the journey as I go, which earlier in the game, I was getting very bitter and angry about it because I saw stuff that I knew wasn't as good. And I was like, this is making like $50 million. And I'm driving Uber. I was like the ladies, but I'm like, I'm driving Uber, you know, like what, mm-hmm. How is this possible? You know? And what I learned a long time ago, being 53 years old, was life ain't fair, and favor ain't fair, and your journey is your journey, and you can take your journey. You're the only one that can go on it. It's not for anybody else, and you have right. It's for you. And there's a reason that you're being molded and shaped in a particular way. And as soon as you accept that, the happier you'll be.
Hmm. And on that note, drops mic. Cedric, where can the people find you, your books, the upcoming projects you got? Plug yourself.
Well, I put everything on Amazon to make it simple. You know, I need it on williesbooks.com and all that stuff. I got to pay them a little bit, you know, but it's no big deal. They have worldwide distribution. So anything for Cedric Boyd regarding the Good Wolf, Randall Whitmore, any other projects, it'll be on Amazon. Clearly, you found me on Twitter at Cedric J. Boyd. Generally, I have an Instagram, but I don't really use it. I generally do more Twitter stuff because mm-hmm. Instagram is more of a visual art form, I guess, a visual streaming service. So I like to write. So I try to write funny stuff on Amazon. On Twitter, and sometimes it lands. I got Facebook, Cedric J. Boyd. You know, I got all the regular stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to hit me, just hit me on Twitter for the most part. And again, you can get the books on Amazon, The Good Wolf, Randall Whitmore. It's got a lot of stars, a lot of really good reviews. I think it's not for children. It's for adults. You need to be 18 years old. Because it is very sexual, it's very raw, the language is very rough, you know. Mm-hmm. So you definitely should be an adult when you read the Good Wolf.
Y'all hear that? Make sure you are 18 plus. And the way the world is going right now, we might even say 21.
Right.
Because everybody's growing up too fast.
Yeah, I don't want your kids picking it up because there's a dog. Oh, there's a little dog on the cover and start reading it. Like, nah, it's not gonna land well, brother.
So. No. Well, Cedric, I really appreciate you for taking the time out of your day to drop some gems and knowledge and share your creative story about the Good Wolf. It's been a pleasure. For anybody that's listening, if you're new to this, if you're old to this, make sure you follow me on all the socials at Marco the Prince. That's MarcoDePrence. And make sure you add .com to it to check out the website. And until next time, y'all, we out.
All right, Marco, thank you. I appreciate your time.